This episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast is brought to you by Arjuna Solutions. Arjuna uses its patented AI and behavioral economics technology to help nonprofits increase their direct response fundraising. It's easy with Arjuna. Learn more at www.arjunasolutions.com.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is your host, Mickey Desai, coming at you from Cause Camp, live in Grand Rapids. I am lucky to be sitting in front of Kyle Stefan. Kyle, did I get it right?
Yeah, it's
Stefan, got it. And Kyle is the marketing supervisor for the Central Missouri Foster Care and Adoption Association. How are you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing pretty well, Mickey. How are you?
What brings you here all the way from Missouri?
So I just wanted to learn a little bit more about how to be a better marketer, because I am the marketing supervisor, as you said. So just be able to learn anything from people who are been doing it a little bit longer than me.
Got it. Have you learned anything yet so far?
Absolutely.
What can you share?
So one of the things that the last speaker said was remember to halt. So we live in kind of an age of Zoom because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So remember to just halt and look at other people, ask how they're doing, and not just saying, how are you, but like actually ask how their heart. Remember to do storytelling. So be vulnerable and be okay to be vulnerable. And that helps people connect with their empathy to you.
Oh, I think that's 100% spot on. I'm actually kind of sad I missed that session here. But so tell us about the work that you do. How did you get involved in this kind of work?
So I have done all kinds of marketing and graphic design things over the years. But being able to work with a nonprofit is definitely something that really helps. Being able to go to work and have an impact makes it worth coming to work. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's no longer work. So for me, being able to help people, especially children who are often forgotten and overlooked, it means the world to me. So the thing that I do for my job is everything outward facing, whether it's the Facebook and social media, to making big posters, or even working with videos and photography. So being able to do everything that represents the company.
Yeah.
So just being able to do something like that will eventually reach a child.
Yeah. That's a lot.
It is. It is a lot.
How do you keep it on top of it all?
I'm always trying to do things that stay on the marketing trend, because mm-hmm. marketing is such a fast moving outlook that you have to be able to be fast. You have to be able to stay with the times. Otherwise, you'll be forgotten.
Sure.
So one of the things that has happened, so compared to last year when we didn't have a marketing department because we're a small nonprofit, compared to this year, we're at 80% increase for engagement, for reach. So just having people be able to reach it and be able to do all those things, that makes such a difference. So we are seeing more family, seeing more kids being served. And because of that, it's in my little part in it. So,
right. What's, as a nonprofit leader, what's your biggest challenge day to day?
Probably, honestly, is just getting the actual families, because it's unlike other places. It's not just like forming a lead. So if you want to be a foster family, you have to actually go through classes and you have to do that. So it's not just an instant like turnover. Oh, I liked your page. I signed up for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. It's a process that takes months to do. So that sort of thing is the biggest hurdle, is getting the people to actually sign up and want to be foster families.
So you have multiple audiences to reach. It sounds like you have am I wrong about that? Is your job simply to reach foster families? Are there other audiences you need to be touching?
Well, we reach all kinds of audiences. Of course, we reach the foster families and give them lessons. We give them resources and materials that they may need. We give things for the kids themselves. We go on field trips. Like recently, we just went to a St. Louis Blues game for 20 kids, and we ended up getting a box for them. So in the VIP section, and the kids loved it.
That's fantastic.
So one of the things that I like to brag about is for every dollar donated to our organization, 98.6 cents goes back to the programs directly to help the children.
My goodness.
So we only use 1.5 cents for operating costs.
That's crazy.
That's because that's what we're here for. We're here to help the kids.
Wow. Okay. So how do you do that? How do you leverage those funds so efficiently?
So a lot of it is, so sometimes we do have things specifically bookmarked for things, as anything does. But what we usually do is just make sure it goes back to the kids. And we have a big pot of things that just make sure we go for it. So one of our biggest programs is a 12 for 12 program. So if you donate $12 per month, that can go to actually getting a child a book bag for when they enter foster care. One of the things that happens when a child enters foster care, because no one chooses that. It's a traumatic experience. We humanize it a little bit more. Instead of getting a trash bag and say whatever you can hold, we make sure it's filled with essential things. So if you are a newborn child, we give you diapers, wipes, clothes, bottles, and we give you a car seat if you need one. We're certified to be able to actually put them into cars so they're safe. We do all these things, and everything we offer for the families are free. And that's because you don't need another financial burden when you are worried about something like that.
That is very, very true. Very noble work. How many people do you serve in the course of a year?
So last year we served 982 families. So that was about, each one is averaging between 3 and 5 people. So about, I think it was 3,743.
Wait a minute. A family averages 3 and 5 fosters a year?
On average. Sometimes there can be more. We have had, like, even my neighbors that at home have 8 kids that they foster.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think my house is full with 3 children. And they absolutely, and a lot of these foster families do that. An unfortunate statistic is we were down over 250. Foster families since the pandemic started, just because they didn't want more people coming in and exposing everybody.
Right.
And that's just a sad fact. So that's one of the things that we have to try to build those numbers back up. And CMFCA covers 24 counties all across Missouri. So, and we will help someone, even if we don't have an office there, we'll drive 3 hours to help a family.
That's just amazing. If you had, in your job as an outward facing individual, what would you tell other similar marketing folks? What words of advice would you share with someone similar about the work that you do and the work that they should do?
Absolutely. One of the things I would say is be personal, be real. You don't need to put on a facade. Everybody always looks at like the Wendy's and the big popular social media things, and those work for them. But what you should do is be yourself, be authentic. And that speaks much more volumes than trying to put on a mask.
So, I mean, I think you're right. I think people definitely need to be more authentic in general. But we live in a culture that doesn't really, pardon the pun, foster that. we're used to putting a pretty face on things. How do you get people to get past that? It takes a certain amount of vulnerability to be authentic.
Absolutely. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, because the vulnerability is what... It speaks to the empath of people, especially working with things that you foster, and especially working with children who have faced these traumas. You need to have that empathy because you are real. And sometimes it's not always perfect. It's not always picture perfect. Like, this is not the Instagram model of the family, because sometimes people are yelling and they're screaming and you're tired. And even if you don't foster as just a parent, you're like, I'm tired some days. There's a lot of stress in the world. And being able to actually showcase that, it makes people relate to you more. You're like, you know, if they can do it and they still can succeed, then maybe it's good for me too.
I agree. I think it's absolutely right. Sometimes it's okay to just be real, even if real means it's heavy.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Kyle, if someone wanted to learn more about you and the work that you do, how would they find you? How would they learn more about the mission?
Absolutely. So you can check us out at our website, which is MO for Missouri, fosteradopt.com. Or you can check us out on Facebook at Foster and Adopt. Or you can check us out on Instagram or other things. And we're getting a TikTok at CMFCA.
TikTok, that's fantastic. Kyle, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Hello and welcome. I'm Mickey Desai, your host for this very quick episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I am sitting here at Cause Camp interviewing folks as they come off their speaking engagements, coming off the stage. Very happy to have with me my guest, Mark Ostash. Mark, did I get it correct?
You did.
Mark is a speaker, among other things, an author,
yep,
a dad, and what else? What am I forgetting?
You know, I'd like to say that I'm a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, and I also stayed at a Holiday Inn once, too.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
What brings you to Cause Camp?
You know, funny you ask. A couple years ago, my wife and two kids, we were vacationing in Grand Haven, and we had just finished our third round of ice cream in 2 days, and we walked past this building, and I said, what is Do More Good?
Yeah.
And I just was so interested in learning more. I looked them up online, and I said, you know what, I'm going to leave them a little note, and I have these gratitude notebooks that I give away. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then it got into Bill's hands, and then Katie's hands, and then here we are.
Amazing how that happens.
Yes.
Okay, so you must travel a lot.
Yes.
And I know that the talks that you give are actually very motivational in some aspects. And what I've heard people say as they come out of the room is, that you exhibit or you bring to the table a certain amount of vulnerability with what you're telling folks. My first very general question is, why?
You know, I feel like we need to go back to just being comfortable sharing ourselves on where we're at and just kind of showing up unfinished, so to speak. So I've learned through over time the way, you know, I'm wired and the way God's made me is just that you need to just be who you are, you know, kind of come as you are. So I've also learned that having been in organizations, you know, where there's lots of people that are burnout and overwhelmed, is that that relational kind of component that usually comes in the form of empathy or vulnerability or just, you know, the personal side is a underutilized strategy to get people to feel like they're at a safe space and that they work for a culture that is beyond the bottom line. So that's, again, my kind of biased perspective. But as I've witnessed, you know, I've done 300 virtual events in 2 years. And
wow.
This exercise, if you really knew me, you'd know that, has become a gateway of connectivity in teams that are fully remote with leaders that are brand new in the last 2 years. So,
but isn't there some danger to being in a workplace situation and being so completely real? And this is the devil's advocate.
Yeah, please, please.
And so, I mean, I get it because I love the idea of convincing folks that we don't need to put up the facade.
Yes.
That it's best to be unfinished, as you say. But isn't there some danger in letting ourselves be that vulnerable?
Yeah, I believe that the goal is not to turn everybody into each other's therapists, and that sometimes too much information is too much information. So I think at least the way that I've been encouraging and coaching is in kind of a more evident way to say, like, we need to resurrect the relational side of the transactional world we live in. So for me, one way is through vulnerability. Through others, it's just saying like, hey, what did you do this weekend before a Monday morning meeting call where you're diving into the to-dos and the week's goals?
Right. Now, my major fear is walking into an office where that's simply a part of what they ask, but they don't really mean it.
Right.
And because I had that experience once. The office always asked, what have you got planned for the weekend? What are you going to do?
Right.
But outside of that, no one really cared. It was still, hey, it's Friday. That means it's Hawaiian shirt Friday. I'm like, no one cares.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And Mickey, I think that's a good point because, like, there is, like, you know, lip service.
Mm-hmm.
Like any organization with their vision and values, is it really what the leaders and people are embodying? But I believe now that the stakes are even higher because hybrid, like, or even fully remote, it really endangers traditional culture. Meaning, like, you know, when someone says, hey, where do you work and why do you work there? It's like, well, if I've never been to the physical brick and mortar headquarters or office space, and I don't really know the people beyond my one day onboarding process by somebody I'll never see again, what is culture?
Right. Right. That's a very good question. But okay, so we are actually living in a world where purely virtual environments do exist and people seem to work well within them.
Yes.
But to your point, I think that creates more need for pure, genuine conversations between people.
There you go.
So
there you go. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And I think that I think remote is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think giving people permission to modify their lives where they're able to manage their own home commitments as well as being accountable and responsible at work is a beautiful thing. And we proved to the world that we can do it. Mm-hmm. Now we need to just make sure we're not going back 5 days a week because senior leadership who's going to retire in 5 years says so.
Amen. Oh my goodness, that's so true. What do you think that the audiences mostly take away from your speeches, your presentations? What do you hope they go home with?
I hope that they give themselves permission to care for themselves and to take a bit of a break. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the things that drive overwhelm is just a perceived optics of guilt. That if they don't do this, you know, we make up a lot of stories as human beings. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those stories just need to be debunked. And one of the ways to debunk them is to be candid and even vulnerable in saying like, hey, Mickey, you know, let's say you and I work together. And I was like, hey, Mickey, I'm making up the story that last email you sent me that you're mad at me. And you know what? I'm going to actually get in front of this before I take that perceived guilt into the weekend where I'm completely distracted from my family, sleep like bad, and then show up on Monday with a happy face on and I'm over caffeinated and tired.
Right.
I just need to say to you, Mickey, was that just a quick email you had to get off your plate? Are you mad at me? You know, and then you'd say, I'm completely cool. You crush it this week. Have a great weekend, you know? So it's like, okay, sweet.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, how many times have we not been able to just speak genuinely to our coworkers about little things like that?
Right.
Why are we always on eggshells, do you think?
Right. So it's just the demands of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And like I read a great book called Margin by an author named Richard Swanson 10 years ago that really has changed the way I look at things. And Richard basically says he was a doctor that saw 95% of his patients come in with depression, anxiety, and fatigue. And he was sick of writing prescriptions for them. So he then dedicated his second half of his career into researching why are we so burnt out. And he said, basically, we lack margin. So margin is saying that your commitments and your load. So if you take all the responsibilities you have and you minus your capacity, we are mostly overdrafting. So we are lacking margin. So what I believe the pandemic has taught many people who work remote is that those 2 hours they get back from the lack of commute and the BS coffee and lunches, it's paying dividends in balancing in the right size family dinners, you know, like walking the dogs, you know, like all these things that the margin you need to fully function where you're not feeling so overwhelmed and anxious every day.
I say something similar in that the pandemic has sort of given us a great opportunity to look at quality of life.
Yes.
And these are not terms that we usually use when we're thinking of the way we live our lives, but now we are, right?
Right.
It's like, okay, my quality of life goes better when I can actually put in a load of laundry and then come back to my desk at home and do my thing. I think these things are significant. They're small but significant, and I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, I do too.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I think just Mickey, going back to this idea of like what is the audience or what are the listeners today? It's like if you feel like you are holding on to guilt on how you're supposed to do things, there's a high probability that you have a false narrative that you need to unpack. And then when you do that, you might realize you're either in a toxic work environment that you need to change, or you need to just take a long weekend and reset your own personal health,
right,
and then go back to realigning on the expectations that you might are misaligned with what's perceived of you.
Yeah, no, absolutely true. And so that I think is going to be my last question is when you run into someone who might need a little help achieving that growth, right? That when you can get to the place and comfortably be vulnerable and comfortably accept that you need to change, how do you encourage someone to get the help they need to do that?
Yeah, I think baby steps, you know, we're creatures of habits. 97% of what we think yesterday, we're thinking again today. So just know that like it's tiny shifts. And if you can just give yourself, if you can break through the resistance and really have a clear vision for what it is you want, and those things are stronger than the dissatisfaction in your current life,
mm-hmm.
you're well on your way to taking that first step.
Fantastic. Mark, fantastic stuff. if a listener wanted to be in touch with you, learn more about you, how would you suggest they find you?
You can send me a fax at, I'm just joking, fax machines don't exist, people. You can send me an email, hello@markostach.com. Yeah. That's MARKOSTACH. And hello@markostach.com. Shoot me
awesome.
A note.
Awesome stuff. Mark, thank you for taking the time
thank
today.
Thank you, too. Thanks, Mickey.
Thank you. This episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast is brought to you by Arjuna Solutions. Arjuna uses its patented AI and behavioral economics technology to help nonprofits increase their direct response fundraising. It's easy with Arjuna. Learn more at www.arjunasolutions.com.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.